We're going to take your calls this hour as we talk with Alan Lokas about his incredible story of Through the Flames, Overcoming Disaster. What an amazing story. Okay, he's next. You're next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Alan Lokas with us, Through the Flames. Alan, what one major issue, what major issue did you learn from this situation? I don't even want to call it a tragedy anymore, because you sound like you came out of it in pretty darn good spirits.
Yeah, I did. And again, that's not to say that it wasn't a rough road, but yes, I'm on the other side, and life is very, very good. I think that I would emphasize again the big point that we can do it. When we go through something that's so difficult, be it an illness or an accident or the loss of a loved one, it's not that something is wrong. And we often think, I did something wrong, I'm being punished for this. It's the nature of life. And I think if we can see it that way, it's almost as if there's an intricate fabric. And woven into that fabric are the joys and the delights and the beauty and the wonder. And also woven into that fabric are the difficult times. They're just part of life. So if we can see that, it doesn't mean that the physical pain doesn't hurt, but it can change our relationship to pain. It can change our relationship to difficulties. I think we see things more clearly. We realize that I didn't do something wrong. What I'm going through is a kind of suffering, a kind of grief, a kind of anxiety, and it's part of life. It is the nature of life. The same as life is going to end. Life is going to end simply because it began. Anything that is born is going to die. And I think the more we can come to grips with that, the more at ease we can be with our life, and the greater sense of inner peace, and therefore a ground that I call abiding happiness, rather than just pursuing these peaks of pleasure, because they're good, they feel wonderful. It's great to buy that new car. It's great to meet someone and fall in love. I mean, I think that these things really make life beautiful. But ultimately, beneath that, we need something that's going to be more lasting, that's going to have legs to go the distance. And that's developed inside of ourselves.
Could you have done it without your wife?
No way.
So what about some people who don't have that support system?
Well, I hate to say this, but when we were in our hospital here in New York, my wife actually said to one of the nurses, "What happens to people who are as injured as my husband is if they don't have an advocate, someone who is fighting for them?" And that nurse said, "They usually die."
Ugh.
That's why I devoted an entire section of this book to encouraging people to have an advocate, to even use some of the legal documents that are available, so that in a hospital, the medical team knows what you want. It's very important. We don't think about it. You know, I had never spent 10 minutes in a hospital as a patient in my life.
All right, let's go to the phones.
Who would expect this?
Let's take some calls. Let's go to Ontario, Canada, in Toronto. Larry's with us on the wild card line. Hey, Larry, go for it.
Hello, Dave and Alan. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Listen, I want to give you a little tale. Something happened to me in 89. I was trading my boat, a smaller boat, for a cruiser, and we were doing a tune-up on it, had all the blowers on, and my buddy went up to the front of it, turned the ignition, and the boat blew up. Like, the whole back of the boat blew up. I was blown 35 feet in the air, and somehow, with the gift of God, I landed on the dock, and we were parked. The whole boat blew up and sank right away.
That's a miracle, Larry. Gabber. Next up, we go to Ben, truck driving in Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hey, Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, George? I wanted to tell you that I've been listening since 2012, and I love all the interesting shows you put on.
They keep changing.
You guys really know how to.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah. And, Alan, I had a little bit of a tragedy. It's not quite as near terrible as yours, but at 10 years old, my father took my stepmother into my mother's home, and my mother couldn't take it, and she shot herself. And then after that, 2012, I lost my father to lung cancer, and it's been rough. I just started having a relationship with him just before. He's the one that taught me how to truck drive. I drive a truck.
Mm-hmm.
But you think you get by stuff, and it's on me all the time. I don't know how to not think about it. You know, it's been rough, but I'm getting through it. And George has helped me with the shows. I tell you, I don't think without George at night, I don't think I could have made it past my father.
Oh, that's great, Ben. First of all, I want you to drive safely.
Always.
Right.
Yeah.
Secondly, I had mentioned this form of therapy called somatic experiencing. These SE therapists are now literally all over the country. It's something you might want to look into because you don't have to carry that trauma with you. People can help with that. It's something you might want to look into.
You know, Alan, when this happened to you, and of course, who knew? But did you have that premonition feeling or anything like that that day?
Not the tiniest bit. And you know, it's an interesting question related to what we just spoke about. The trauma therapists tell us that if we have even an inkling, if we have 1 second of warning, then the entire traumatic experience will be different. But this happened with absolutely no warning whatsoever. We hit the ground, we crashed, that was it. It was a perfectly clear day, no indication. So, no, I didn't know, none of us knew, it just was suddenly there. You know, and also, I just wanted to back up to something that Ben said. And people often say this, they tell me about something that's happened and they say, oh, but it wasn't as serious as what you went through. You know, there's no comparing when it comes to suffering and to stress that we go through. If a friend of yours has just been diagnosed with cancer and you're dealing with just a head cold, you might say, well, how can I complain about this cold when my friend is going through something so awful? And that's true, but you know something? The cold still feels awful. And it's okay to acknowledge that the cold feels awful.
Well, it may be okay, but how do you meditate to fight your way back?
Well, that's another good question. I had assumed that as soon as I got home, that I would be able to pick up my meditation practice again, because it's really been kind of the bedrock of my life for over 20 years, and I couldn't do it, and it was very upsetting. Fortunately, I have a wonderful teacher I still work with and consult with, and she said, no, you know, of course you can't, not at this time. There was too much physical pain, there was too much mental and emotional turmoil. And mostly my head wasn't clear. You know, I couldn't really be in any sort of a serious conversation because I just wasn't cognizant. I had gone through, besides the crash, back here in New York, I developed sepsis in the hospital.
Oh, geez, you got everything happened to you.
Well, yeah, you know, oddly enough, I got out of these so-called third world countries fine. And then it was here in New York that this very serious infection hit. For those who don't know, sepsis is an infection that really attacks the entire system, kills more than 1 million people each year.
It sure does.
Fortunately, you know, I was in good hands. They got it quickly. I also developed ICU psychosis. I was completely nuts, which, you know, I was, the funny thing is, I was having a good time. I went back to my roots as a professional singer and actor. I was singing away, full voice. I was proclaiming monologues, but scared the dickens out of my family because they didn't know if I was ever going to come out of that. Fortunately, I did, but even as I got home, my head was not clear at all. So it took maybe as much as 2 months before I could even really focus enough to begin 5 to 10 minutes of meditation. My usual practice had been about 45 minutes a day, but it came back. You know, everything has come back. Some things are slightly different. You know, I don't handle a knife and fork the way I did, but I handle it perfectly well now.
Are you astounded by how quickly things came back? Because it's only been several years.
Yes, but you know, when you're going through the struggle, it doesn't feel like it's happening quickly. I suppose now if I look back and say, it's only a little over 2 years ago, I suppose that is extraordinarily fast. But when you're going through it, it certainly doesn't seem fast. You know, there's one other benefit that came out of this that I should mention because, you know, maybe I can be of use to you. In the fire, my nails essentially got melted away, but I have no fingerprints, which opens up a whole new career if I choose to, you know, go in that direction, which I'll probably pass on.
Which I don't think you would.
No, I'll probably pass on it, but it's intriguing.
Let's go to Alyssa in Bloomington, Indiana. First-time caller. Hello, Alyssa.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, we sure can.
Okay. I am 25 years old, and when I was 21, I got in a car accident and broke my neck. And whenever they found out that, they found out that I had previously injured it and that I had arthritis all the way down my spine and that I have degenerative disc disease. And I go and see a pain specialist, but I really want to get the problem fixed. I want to somehow somebody point me in the direction for a surgeon because my doctor now only wants to prescribe me the painkillers and give me injections. He doesn't want to fix the root problem. And I didn't know, because you said your wife had a crushed disc. I didn't know if maybe you knew a good surgeon out there or anything to point me in the right direction so that I can start changing, because it's hard for me to walk or anything.
What about stem cells, Alan, for her?
You know, I want to be really cautious because I'm not a doctor. In my wife's case, there was no surgery. It wasn't necessary by isolating her and keeping her still for a few months. Things seem to have stabilized. She's still dealing with pain. Alyssa, where do you live?
She's in Bloomington, Indiana.
Yeah. You know,
which, by the way, they got blasted with a lot of snow, too, so yeah. They're getting it from all sides.
I don't know. I wouldn't know how to recommend a surgeon. I know surgeons here in New York, but I think that I would ask your doctor, or if you don't feel your doctor is guiding you in the way that you like, I would seek other opinions. And, you know, also listen to the other opinions, because if you get other opinions that are also saying stay away from surgery, you might want to listen to that. Surgery is always serious. You know, I say that.
Especially in that region of the body, Alan.
Well, especially, yeah, yes, exactly. You know, doctors will tell you the only minor surgery there is always done on someone else. Anything that goes in around your back, you want to listen to them. They have more experience than we do. I'm not saying they're always right. Certainly I'm proof of that. But get a second opinion, get a third opinion, and listen carefully. You know, and also we have access to so much information on the web. But we have to know how to interpret that. We can't suddenly become doctors ourselves because we read what's on the web. But there's a lot of information available. Listen wisely and listen to your body.
Was there ever a point, Alan, that you got so depressed you wanted it to end?
No. I mentioned that my wife felt that way. Not that she would have taken her own life, but no, that probably doesn't fit with, I don't know, my way of thinking or my way of dealing with things. I'd probably just keep on struggling.
Okay, no. Let us go next to Ryan driving in Iowa. Welcome to the program, Ryan. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Good, Ryan. Thank you.
I'm listening to Alan, and it's a great, great program. And I had this overwhelming feeling of why, he said, why or why not this happened to him. And I got a feeling of why it happened to him.
Ah, I'd love to hear.
Well, if this experience didn't happen to you, you wouldn't have wrote the book, or you wouldn't be able to reach thousands of people. I mean, maybe that was your intended purpose for life, is to be able to raise awareness.
Yes, that's the kind of thing that we never know.
But he could be right.
Well, certainly. You know, at the end of the book, now I was writing the end of the book over a year after the accident. So I found myself writing something that I couldn't believe that I was writing, and I think that this relates to what you're saying. There was something inside of me that was saying, if there was some sort of a magic pill or supernatural power that could turn back the clock and I would not have been in that accident, I think I would decline, because too much good has come from this that outweighs the pain that's left and the inconveniences. And one of the biggest points is exactly what you said, which is the opportunity that has opened up to be able to reach people who are going through difficult times. And that's very meaningful to me in my life as a teacher, as someone who guides people through meditation, that I can reach people. And, you know, someone, a previous caller, mentioned being in an automobile accident. This sounds rather cruel, and I don't mean it that way, but so many of us have been in automobile accidents. I hardly know anyone who hasn't on some level.
Fender benders or anything.
Exactly. But the words plane crash get everybody's attention.
Yes, they do.
So suddenly, because I was in a plane crash, all the newspapers write about it, television, radio, and that, to me, meant maybe exactly what you're saying. There is an opportunity here to offer something to people who are in need, who are listening, and I don't want to turn away from that. I want to try to do what I can. As long as this has happened to me, then I'm going to go with it.
Well, you're touching a lot of lives right now from people who have gone through probably not as tragic as what you've done, but you're helping a lot of people. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with Alan Lucas here as we talk about his work, Through the Flames. Are you a member yet of Beyond Belief? You can be. It is free for you to watch. Simply go to this website, beyondbelief.com. You can actually look at all the episodes for a period of time absolutely free, beyondbelief.com. And welcome back. With this remarkable story, Alan Lucas, Through the Flames, a plane crash several years ago with his wife. How many people were aboard that plane, Alan?
There were 71 of us.
71. What kind of plane was it?
A Fokker 100, F-O-C-K-E-R. It could hold 100. There were 71 on board. It carries its fuel in the wings. That was probably one of the big issues. It was the wings that sheared through the electrical cables as we came down and sparked, and that's why the whole plane went up in flames.
Were people screaming? Do you remember that part?
You know, I I cannot remember anything audible other than my wife and I and my conversation. I remember calling out to everyone to be calm, but I could, there was an interesting thing. I could not remember any sound. I know that there was a lot of screaming and yelling, but it's blocked out. Or maybe I was just so focused on getting my wife out of there. I don't know. There's, you know, strange things happen psychologically.
Okay, next up, let's go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's Dana's turn on Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Dana, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, Alan.
Hi, Dana.
Alan, hi. I have a question. I heard you earlier in the show mention that people attribute these things to the divine, and I also heard you mention that someone, a friend of yours, said that that woman on the hill that said you would be all right, sir, that was an angel. But I know you teach meditation. I agree with you that we have incredible inner strength. We can get through anything, but with someone bigger's help. My meditation is when I pray to the Father, my Savior, and the Holy Ghost. I never heard you mention God, and I know people that practice meditation, if it's not prayer to, you know, the known God, they're New Agey type. And I don't understand why New Age and so many people who meditate or people who teach meditative techniques believe that it's all themselves, that it's not. Why do they have to be mutually exclusive? And are you agnostic? Are you on the fence about, because you keep saying, you said supernatural, you said divine, you never said God once. And I'm just so astounded, and I'm not being critical or judgmental, but just so it's astounded that people can go through something like this and think it was truly just themselves without any help.
Well,
that's a mouthful, I know. I'm sorry, but...
Thank you for the question.
Go ahead, Alan.
My meditation practice, I guess I'll start from that perspective, is anything but New Age. It goes way back, more than 2,500 years. I practice in a tradition that was taught in India by the Buddha. I think that I don't rule anything out for myself as to the existence of God in some form or a consciousness that exists within the world, a spirit that exists. In the case of something like this, where it's really unexplainable as to how does one survive when, you know, universally the medical opinion was that I wouldn't for a second rule out a divine power watching over me, or that maybe there is a plan into which I fit. I tend to be on the scientific side, so my initial looking at a situation like this looks at the causes and conditions that exist. As, for instance, just as an example, the two people sitting directly in front of us got out of the plane without a scratch. Then came my wife and myself in the next row. We were injured. The woman sitting directly behind us was our guide. She was killed. There are three rows of seats. Two people uninjured, two people seriously injured, one person killed. How does that happen? The will of God certainly could be,
mm-hmm.
or...
Fate?
Fate, sure. You know, what I'm willing to say is I don't have answers. So if that puts me leaning toward the agnostic, maybe that's so. But mostly I think of myself as not ruling anything out.
Well, let me ask you this, Alan. Do you think, let's hedge here, that what happened to you and the subsequent survival was more miracle or more luck?
Well, luck doesn't really play into it for me. Or maybe I would be more comfortable with good fortune. I don't know. Miracle makes it, yeah, I think as the definition that we spoke about before, unexplainable. So what is unexplainable today, we call a miracle. Yeah, I think it's rather miraculous. Not only that I survived, but the way I've survived, that I'm thriving. And believe me, I'm not beyond saying, even though I would say I come from a kind of scientific viewpoint, I am not beyond saying, thank God, you know, because sometimes those are just the words that come out of my mouth. But I think the question that was posed is a very legitimate and perceptive question. I find myself being involved in conditions because it's by changing conditions, I believe that we can make changes in our lives. If things are not going well in my career, then rather than looking out and saying, well, this person's to blame, and if only this person didn't do that, I think it's better if I look within me and see, how am I participating here? What can I change that might change my fate, if you want to say that, or my luck or my good fortune? But I certainly, with that, would not rule out prayer.
Let's go to Palm Springs, California. Margo's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Margo. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Alan.
Hi.
I wanted to mention, my ears really perked up when you said that your friend said to you that it was an angel that came up to you and said, you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
That exact same thing happened to me. I'm going to give you the short version, condensed version. I'm standing at the end of my sidewalk, gravel road. I look up, and suddenly there's a car there. There was absolutely no sound whatsoever. There's a woman sitting behind the wheel of a, I said car, it was a truck, sitting behind the wheel of the truck. She's looking directly at me. She gets out of her truck. I was going through a lot of traumas at the time. She walked up to me, said, you're going to be okay. Your mother was a strong woman, pull from her strength. Then we had a bit of a conversation. I said to her, as she's walking away, what's your name? And she told me, she said, my name is Loretta. She gets back in the car. She goes, she makes a U-turn. There's no sound. There's no gravel. She goes to the end of the road. It's a T-intersection. She turns right, and I'm thinking to myself, what did I just experience? And I go running to the end of the road, and I'm thinking, I'm not done. I have more questions. And she then, I see her driving away, and it comes to another T-intersection. She vanishes. She didn't turn left. She didn't turn right. She was just gone.
A miracle in the making.
Yeah, you know, sometimes there would be those who listen to this story and would say, well, you missed something, or you didn't see her turn, or there was sound and you were distracted. But I love the story the way it is. And I believe it happened exactly the way you're saying, because I've had similar experiences. You know, having a conversation with someone where there was another person in the room and the other person said, no, there was no conversation. You guys weren't speaking. And yet that person gave me information that I used. How else would I have known? So there are things, you know, if you look back and say 120 years ago, we didn't know anything about the subconscious. The phrase hadn't even been used yet, maybe 130 years ago. And yet now we know it's the single most dominant factor in our thinking. So, you know, in a sense, what do we know? We just don't know. So when I hear stories like that, I just say, wow, I love it. You know, who knows what we're going to find out tomorrow?
Was there a moment, and you're human, that you got really depressed during the healing
Yeah, absolutely. And it was when I thought things were going to be great, which is when I came home from the hospital, and they weren't.
No.
It was awful. I was just over and over again, I want my life back. And that wasn't happening. I just listened a few hours ago to an interview with James Levine, the music director of the Metropolitan Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And when he had his accident that has left him in a wheelchair, but he's back conducting, he used those exact same words. After that accident, all he could think about was, I want my life back. And he got a life back. He has a life now where he's not walking, but he's doing what he loves to do. You could just see the joy in his face when he was conducting. That's the big key to healing, not what we don't have. As you know, some people, as we get older, we think about, oh, I used to be able to run, and I used to be able to do this and that, and now I can't because I'm older. Yes, but what about what you can do? What about the fact that you earned those wrinkles and you developed wisdom that you didn't have? It's right now, in this moment, that all the good stuff is happening. And if we don't see it that way, then we're just going to look back and there can be a sense of bitterness. I think we're better off being in the present, even with the bad stuff that happens, because it's also where the good stuff is going to happen.
Let's go to Oneida, New York. Ron Stern, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Ron. Go ahead.
Good morning, George and Alan. Thank you for accepting my call.
Of course. Thank you.
Alan, I had a question about in all the trauma that you went through, you know, day by day, your physical injuries heal. How about the mental and psychological effect?
I think that the healing mentally was the most difficult part. You know, your question is insightful because people invariably ask about physical pain, because we all know about physical pain. But the mental part was the most difficult part. That's the part where I was clinging to this desire, this craving to have my life back the way it was. And only as I began to accept that that wasn't going to happen did the healing process begin. And then, of course, in my case, going back to two things that I really love, one was to teach and the other was to write, these were enormously healing because those are things that mean so much to me. And having loving people in my life as well. So healing was always a goal, however it was going to be. Once I let go of wanting what I couldn't have and began to realize all the richness that was there in what I could have, that's when the healing really began to happen.
You lead a community meditation center in New York City.
Yes.
And so you've been meditating for a long time, way before this accident. I bet that helped you.
Well, I don't believe I would have survived the accident itself otherwise, because in the most difficult moment, being in a plane that was on fire with no way to get out, I was stuck. I had been able to push my wife out the emergency door, but I couldn't move. My foot was caught on something, and I was on fire. And even with the terrifying situation, my mind was clear enough to realize my foot was stuck. I had to do something to free it. I couldn't see what it was caught on because of the thick smoke. But I think the years of practicing every single day, of watching the inner experience, what's going on in the mind, just gently observing what's coming up, was life-saving in that moment. And then again, in the healing process, realizing that everything is impermanent, this is all going to change. It's going to change for the better, because that was my outlook. I truthfully didn't know it was going to change for the better, but I believe that it would. And almost all of it did change for the better and is changing for the better. So I think that the meditative practice was key. Today, of course, as you know, there is the current rage as mindfulness practices, meditation practices, and I think that that's of value, but the original purpose of why meditation was taught and practiced had to do with gaining insight and wisdom and seeing the ways in which we cause ourselves stress and discomfort and suffering and learning how we can stop doing that. And that was a key part of healing for me.
All right, let's go to Ember Grove Heights, Minnesota. Dave, let's squeeze you in here. Thanks, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Alan, this is a book I definitely plan on reading. Thank you for coming on the show tonight, and George, thanks for inviting him.
Sure thing.
Something you said earlier about having an advocate for a person in a hospital situation like this, I think it's just so important. I've been an advocate for friends and family when they've been in the hospital. When I went in myself, I didn't think to ask for anybody because I thought I could handle things. And it was just a minor situation that I thought would be no big deal. And then without my permission and unnecessarily, they mistakenly cut off my leg. Oh. And if I had had someone there to speak for me, because they'd medicated me and I was no longer coherent, the whole thing never would have happened. I'm not going to go into details and waste your time with that, but it's really important for people to be advocates for other people, for friends and family, and not to be embarrassed to ask someone maybe to come with them if they need to go in for some kind of treatment, even if you think it's a minor procedure, because small mistakes can become big ones.
That's a good point, David. Almost out of time, Alan. He's absolutely right.
Yeah.
You do need that support group and that help like you had with your wife. As you said, you wouldn't have made it without her. Through the Flames, available right now, I trust?
It is. All outlets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And support our independent bookstores if you can.
Okay. Thank you so much, Alan. Alan's website, by the way, is also linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is his full name, alanlocus.com. No need to spell it because it's all set up for you at coasttocoastam.com. I'll be back in a moment as we talk about prophecy. And here's our last emerging artist for the night, Adam Crow, The Wildest Place from Honolulu, Hawaii.